This is Carolyn Jones on May 30th, 2018 at the Princeton Public Library as part of the Voices of Princeton project. I'm here today with Bonnie Schultz and Jonathan Eckstein.
Hi, I'm Bonnie Schultz.
And you are the...
And I'm the interviewer.
And I'm Jonathan Eckstein, and I'm the interviewee.
And my husband, Jonathan, has grown up in Princeton. He's been here for years. So what brought you and your family to Princeton?
Well, my father got a job teaching at the university when I was between one and two.
And do you have any memory of coming to town?
The first thing I remember is my third birthday, which was in the Ferris Thompson apartments on Western Way, and I just remember it was March 1st, and it was snowing very hard, and big globs of wet snow were falling on the windows, but that's the first thing I remember. I mean, I think when they first came here, they rented a place in Griggstown for a year, which was a little Norwegian colony at that point, a little general store. But then we moved into town. And let's see. So I remember going to the Nassau Street School, which is now a Princeton University building, for kindergarten. And they were very, very strict. I remember it was not fun at all. I remember we were sitting around the piano and I clicked my tongue. And the teacher said, "Who clicked their tongue?" And I didn't say anything.
Yeah, I think a lot of the boomers grew up with that kind of strict schooling. Nowadays, yeah. It would be anathema.
And then after that, I went for first. Then we got a house in the Gray Farm area, which is the little area. It's on the, I guess, the east or north side of Harrison Street, right by the lake. It had been a farm until pretty recently before I moved in, so all the trees were like little saplings, and most of the lots were empty when we moved there, and most of the houses, I mean, the houses were built piecemeal, customized one by one for Princeton professors, so each one was in a completely different style from the next one, so there was like, you know, bizarre modern house, and then a replica of an old farmhouse, and then a ranch, and just random-looking houses sprouting up one by one.
Yeah, I remember when we first went down to that area and you showed it to me. I was fascinated by all the different architectural styles. I just thought it was such a cool neighborhood. I never saw so many contemporaries when we were living in Boston.
It was between Butler and the lake. Butler was a huge... thing that looked like army barracks that was built, I think, right after the war for returning students who were married. And they just tore that down last year.
Yeah, a lot of students were coming to Princeton on the GI Bill.
Yeah, so.
So they built barracks for them to live in, which was rather strange, since I'm sure they would be happy to get out of barracks. Right. But it's been there for years, and just recently was demolished by the university. How has Princeton changed over the period of time that you've known it?
Yeah, so I guess I moved, it must have been about 1960 when my family moved here, and then from 76 to 95, I didn't live here. I was mostly around Boston, which is where we met. But So I went away for college and grad school and some jobs and a bunch of other things. And my company went bankrupt in 1995, and I got a job of teaching at Rutgers. That's why we moved back to this area. So the town is not so different, I think. It's pretty recognizable from what it was. There's a lot more places to eat. It used to be if you wanted food that was decent, you had to go to Trenton. That was the big metropolis. What's really different is Route 1. I remember it was just a long stretch of sod farms, open fields, just those little jug handles in the middle of fields. Nothing. You know, there was between Princeton... and the the shopping mall that's now in Lawrence on the business route one now, there were basically just two diners. There was the Colonial Diner, which is now a Porsche dealership, and there was the Princetonian Diner, which is still there, but there was nothing around it. It was just fields. So, like, that has completely changed. The town doesn't look so different. It just has a lot more choices of places to eat.
Well, there's some landmarks that went away and changed, right? What about the Playhouse?
Oh, yes. So that was an interesting one. So there used to be two movie theaters. There was the Garden, which was the smaller one, and there was the Playhouse, which was the bigger one. Okay, and the Playhouse, the entrance of the Playhouse is exactly where Mediterra restaurant is now. And it was quite a big movie theater. It had just one screen, but it was quite a big movie theater. It was surrounded by an enormous gravel parking lot. So that entire block, which is now all those kind of condos and things, was just this big gravel parking lot. And I remember, I think it was in high school, another family took me to see the Poseidon Adventure there. And it was, there was a huge thunderstorm during the movie. It was summer. And all the water from that huge gravel parking lot rolled down and flooded the theater. So they kept showing the movie, but every few minutes, people in the forward rows were moving back because water was slapping around their feet. And I mean, it went very well with the movie, which is basically at the same plot. So, yeah, so there was that. I think it's a shame what they did to the Dinky Station. I remember that was this really old-fashioned station with dark wood benches and a big ticket window and a baggage place. And, you know, I mean, the building's still there and the new station is nice, but, you know, I think they really should have found a way to keep that place because it really had a lot of character.
So tell us some more about your formative experiences in Princeton.
Okay. So I'm trying to think.
Like when you were a kid, do you remember when Barbara Sands started the Summer Chamber Series?
Yes. So we had there was a friend of our family, it was a woman named Barbara Sands, she sort of single-handedly started this chamber music series. It was a free concert series in the summer. It's still going on. It's in Alexander Hall now. But it used to be at the Graduate College, which is, you know, near the golf course. And when the weather was nice, it would be outside in the Graduate College in a courtyard under a ginkgo tree. It was very beautiful. I mean, I remember that when it first started, I was like a very little kid, and I was just sitting on a blanket being restless. But then after a few years, they pressed us into service, so we would give out programs, we'd sell lemonade, and you could only get out of this courtyard through one very narrow sort of passageway, archway. And so when the concert ended, we would ambush everyone there asking for donations to support the concert series. Eventually, I think they decided, it became very popular, I think they decided it was a fire hazard having everyone stuck in that courtyard. So when I came back here in 95, that was always just in the concert hall. I also remember when I was I must have been about 10, when Robert Kennedy was assassinated, there was a train that took his body from Boston all the way down to Washington for burial. And I remember we all went to the side of the train tracks in Princeton Junction to watch it go by. And it was this enormous long train with, at that time they had these huge sort of hulking black locomotives, and all the cars were kind of a dull brown, and it went on and on and on. And at the end there was this car like you see in the old movies for campaigns where it has like sort of open at the end with railings, and that was, this coffin was there, and it just slowly went by and then everyone went home. But it was like a very, very sad event.
So do you remember your parents and their friends must have been extremely depressed with all the assassinations.
Yeah, it was a rough time. I mean, there wasn't any unrest in Princeton, you know, with all, but you know, there were riots all over all the major cities after, you know, it was that terrible sequence where, you know, Martin Luther King was assassinated, then Robert Kennedy was assassinated. It really felt very dislocating. People were very dispirited.
And your dad, wasn't he in a group with Barbara to play music?
Yeah, they played
some. He was a violinist.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't very good, but he enjoyed playing violin. You know, they had a little chamber music group. I got into jazz later, but playing saxophone, but I didn't start too early. Let's see, some other things. So I remember when Hoagie Haven opened.
That was a historical event.
That was a major historical event. Only, originally it was called Hoagie Heaven. It seemed exactly the same, like the food seemed exactly the same, but it was called Hoagie Heaven. And the sign was in script, so it looked to me like Hoagie Heaver. And I know, I mentioned this to my friends, and they all started calling it The Heave. And they still call it that. But they still go and get hoagies when they're back in town. So, but that's a real Princeton institution. I did some other things. So in high school, I was Princeton. The Princeton area had one of the first like youth computer clubs in the world. I think it was when it first started. I think it was in a barn in Hopewell, full of old computers. It was started by a guy named Claude Kagan. And when I joined it, it met in the I joined the club around 1970. I think it would have been like 71 or 2. That time it was meeting in a room in the basement of the Princeton Equad that was full of all kinds of weird junk equipment. But before that, I think it started probably about 66 or something like that in this guy's barn out in Hopewell. Because, you know, there were no personal computers then. I mean, a computer was, you know, minimum the size of a large refrigerator. And that was a pretty small one, you know.
And what was the name of the guy who found
it? Claude Kagan was his name. But it was called the Resistors, the Radically Emphatic Students Interested in Science, Technology, and Other Research Studies. But we would just sort of get together and we'd do these programming projects kind of impromptu, and we'd have a big dinner at someone's house every Saturday night. The main thing we did, I remember the nice thing about living in Princeton is that the university gave us accounts on their computers. So they had a huge, for the time, computer with 2 megabytes of memory. Okay, it had its own building just kind of in back of the eating clubs off Prospect. And you talk to it by feeding big decks of punch cards into it, which we didn't like. But we had accounts on those systems. We had, and they let us use the other thing. They had what's called a PDP-10, a big computer, you know, would fill a couple of these rooms in the chemistry department for visualizing molecules. And we were allowed to use that after hours. And so a few of my friends and I made a movie on that computer. Of all kinds of animated sort of abstract shapes moving around. It took 2 entire nights to shoot a like 5-minute movie, because the way it worked was there was actually a physical movie camera that pointed at the screen. It was the solenoid on the shutter was connected to one of the flashing lights on the computer, because they were covered with flashing lights then, and you would blink that light and it would open the shutter, and then you would draw a picture on the screen, say 300 times, and then you blink the light again to close the shutter and advance the film. So it took like, you know, hours to make that movie. And I don't think that people who owned the computer were too happy about it, but we made. Anyway, it's kind of still interesting to see that movie. And the other thing we got, I mean, we were definitely not sports people, but in high school we got into bike riding. It's a very good area for bike riding.
You went to PDS, right?
Yeah. From eighth grade on, I went to Princeton Day School. But we had a big biking club, which we allowed us to get out of gym, which was great because gym was always the worst. So, but, I mean, there was less traffic then, which helped, but there's just a lot of roads out in the country back towards, like, Hopewell, Pennington, that area, that are good for biking. There was this one incident I remember. I wasn't with the club. I was just with my girlfriend, and we were biking out behind Hopewell in, the Sourland Mountain area, it's called. And I think we had a flat tire. We had some problem, and we decided to just call my mother to get a ride back, who can fix the flat or something. So we went into a house, and it was open, and there was no one in it, and there was no phone. This is in the, I mean, I think it might have been in college then, so we're talking about late 70s. So I went to the next house. There was someone there, but they had no phone. They sent us a few houses down and said, oh, I think this guy has a phone. So we went a few more houses down, and the guy let us use the phone, and he was talking about how his billy goat had lost its mate and was chasing the dog around the kitchen table. And we really felt like we were in Appalachia, which I guess technically you are in Appalachia, since the Sourlands are a branch of the Appalachians. So, but that was, it was really interesting to see how close to Princeton was a completely different world. You know, I mean, it was literally 40 minutes on the bike and you were out there. So, I don't know if there are other things we want to talk about or.
Well, what were the best memories of Princeton?
Oh, boy, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I had a lot of fun with that computer club, because I'm a
nerd. Did you guys have a reunion in the recent past?
Yeah, we had a reunion. Well, it's not that recent. It's like 1998 we had a reunion.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's when it was, yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, it's a pleasant place to grow up.
And you picked up the sax in high school, right?
Yeah, late in high school I picked up the sax. But that was something I really kind of got into in college. I did not so much here. Though, a couple of my friends I grew up with, one of them had fair amount of musical training, but we kind of learned how to play jazz. And that woman, Barbara Sand, who did the chamber concerts, had a nice music room. It kind of built onto our house, so that was a good place to play. So, I don't know. I mean,
you had a lot of music around you as you were growing up.
Yeah,
like.
Yeah. There was.
Would you say the town was musical?
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, there's Westminster. I mean, hope we can hold on to that. Yeah, I think one of my favorite babysitters was from Westminster, and there's always, you know, there were a lot of concerts. I remember some fairly big acts would come to Alexander Hall, so we saw Chick Corea and Brecker Brothers there, I remember. And I think Herbie Hancock played somewhere when he was kind of doing his big, like, jazz fusion funk thing. I think he played at, like, Dillon Gymnasium or something like that. I remember we went to see him, yeah. So there was all kinds of music, you know, from rock and pop. And remember, there was a rock band, sort of jazz rock band, that came out of Princeton High School when was called Aqueous Fowl, and they were quite good, actually. So.
And you went to school with Mary Chapin Carpenter, didn't you?
Yeah, and I remember she would play at she would sometimes play at the assembly at the beginning of the day.
She's a folk singer.
She's a folk, kind of folk rock singer. I mean, she's got a whole bunch of albums out now. But yeah, she was a Princeton Day School West Ender type.
and was B.B. Newworth? She went through the
high school. Yeah, she went through, and yeah, I mean, I was in a English class with her once, and then, but she switched from PDS back to high school because they had a much better drama program. But yeah, like I knew, I mean, I had been in classes with her, I knew people who knew her.
Didn't you take courses at the university?
Yeah, so I took, in high school, I took two math courses at the university. So yeah, I took calculus as a junior, and then halfway through the year, the head of the math department said you should take it at Princeton instead. So I took a couple of math courses at the university and high school. So that was a very nice opportunity. So when I went to college and majored in math, I kind of was already ahead of the game because of that.
So how did you find the relationship? You guys are very connected to Princeton University because your father taught there. But the town-gown relationship, do you have any memories of there ever being any issues like there can be now with the dinky move and things like that?
Yeah, I don't have recollection. I mean, some of my friends had parents who worked at the university, and a lot didn't. So it seemed kind of fluid. I don't remember much tension about that. I remember there was some tension about, you know, the town was and is very strict about like signs and what can be put out on the street and so forth. So like on Nassau Street, like the signs can't stick out from the buildings. There's no neon signs, there's no lighted signs. And there were a lot of rules, like one thing that my parents both came one way or another from Europe. So one thing that annoyed them was there was no al fresco dining. That wasn't allowed. Okay. I don't know. It was somehow considered disruptive. I mean, they complained about it. So it's different now. If you go to town now, there's a lot of places you can eat outside. And I don't know if it's legal, but they do let bands play a little bit. But in a way now,
Saturday night.
I appreciate.
I don't know if it's official or not.
But on the other hand, all those rules about how the stores could look and so forth, I mean, in retrospect, you kind of appreciate it because you look at other downtowns in New Jersey and how they've aged and they don't look very good now, even ones that are pretty active, you know. So it seemed like all that, you know, the pretty police or whatever it was seemed to actually serve some function because the downtown is a lot more attractive than, you know, go up to Somerville or something, which is very active. It's not a dead area at all, but it doesn't look as nice. So, for the biggest event, I think really that Robert Kennedy thing was the biggest event I remember.
You were in Europe a fair amount in the summer because your parents, your mother would take you back to England and Norway.
Weren't
you there for Nixon's residence?
Yeah, so when Nixon resigned, we were actually in London, and we had to watch it on the TV in London, and it was like 2 a.m. or something ridiculous. So I do remember, the moon landing, I remember watching the moon landing on TV at our house. It was supposed to be, we watched them land, and then they were supposed to rest for 6 hours, and then it was supposed to come on like the next morning or something, but they couldn't sleep, you know. Would you be able to sleep if you just landed on the moon? So they moved the moonwalk up, so we watched it. I think it was quite late at night, but I remember we watched it. You know, that was pretty exciting. I mean, everyone just had little black and white TVs, but, you know, that was the picture was a little black and white picture, so made no difference. But, yeah, I mean, I think those are the main events I remember.
And did you like going to Princeton Day School for high school?
I liked the teachers. I think most of my friends actually were from the high school. I do remember.
And Ewing, right?
Well, so I had a small group of friends that actually more in touch with than the ones from the high school that were all the sort of non-West Enders who went to PDS. And some of them were from, you know, Ewing. others were from Princeton. I mean, I remember middle school was a big mess for me because we went to Switzerland for my father's sabbatical for sixth grade, came back in seventh grade, and I'd found school very easy. I mean, it's funny, my younger son went to Riverside School, the same one I went to for elementary school, which is kind of neat, but I think it was a lot better for him then. I didn't find it bad, but I just found it very easy and dull. And when we were in Switzerland, I went to a British school that worked us a lot harder. And there were a few things that we did a bunch of kind of rote learning stuff that I didn't like so much, but it generally was a lot more challenging. I was a lot happier with it. So I came back, they put me in this thing, sort of experimental thing they had called multi-age, which was supposed to be more customized to students, individual needs, but it was very disorganized. I think all the teachers were basically teaching because they didn't want to be drafted into the Vietnam War, and it just was very disorganized, and so my parents put me in. This was when, this would have been 1970, about, 70, 71. So then, for eighth grade, I went to PDS, which I wasn't, socially, I wasn't so keen on it, but the teachers were very good, so I had a close, a small circle of friends there, and then I got into the computer club. I mean, I remember what got me into computers is they bought something called a PDP-8, which was, wouldn't be fit to be in your toaster now, but it was like a gigantic refrigerator-sized thing covered with blinking lights, and I was an eighth grade boy, and I saw this thing coming into the school, and I saw the blinking lights, and I thought, okay, I have to master this machine. And so I did that for a few months and got into it, and then I joined the computer club, and that's how I ended up with lots of friends from the high school. And so we graduated pretty soon to the bigger computers that were at Princeton. But, the IBM PC didn't. So personal computers kind of came out while I was in college. I remember one of my wealthier friends actually had an Apple II. That was a big, big deal. Then you plugged it into your TV. It didn't even have a screen. And then IBM PC came out in 1980, which is when I graduated college. And then things changed pretty quickly after that. So,
how did when you went off to Harvard, in terms of college towns, Cambridge is a much bigger city, but Harvard Square on a weekend was probably a lot.
Yeah, it was a lot more fun.
The quiet of Princeton.
It was a lot more fun to go there, at that time. I think it's a little bit, the difference is probably narrowed somewhat, but Princeton was pretty sleepy. Nowadays you go out on the weekend, the town's full of people wandering around. I don't know what they're doing because all the stores are closed.
And
you can only eat or drink. There doesn't seem to be anything else to do. But Harvard Square was like that in 1976, and the stores were actually open, and there were also nightclubs and things happening. So it was pretty different.
And your family never went into. I was amazed when I met you, I grew up in Long Island, and I was going into New York City every weekend, and you guys didn't really make the trek into New York that much, right? And you went to Philly more.
No, we went to New York, but not a lot. I remember we went for, I remember when 2001 Space Odyssey came out, it was only playing in New York, in a huge, huge theater, and my mother took me there. And there was even an intermission, to go out and, use the facilities and get some drugs and whatever. So, it was a very different era. I remember going to museums, going to Empire State Building. We did go, but it wasn't like we were a bedroom community for New York. There were far fewer people actually who worked in New York than who lived here. That was kind of a rare thing to do. I think people who worked in New York lived closer.
With all the bad restaurants, did you guys get together for dinner?
Yeah, we made lots of food, and There weren't two. I remember there was one kind of not very good Chinese restaurant in the shopping center, and there was the Grotto, which was on Witherspoon Street. There was the Annex. Yeah, so there was La Hier's, which was very expensive, but everyone said it wasn't that great. So, yeah. And apparently it was sort of owned by Princeton somehow, yeah. So they would, if someone came to town, they would wine and dine them there, but they were really, you know, the money they appeared to be spending, they were sort of just recovering. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot. I mean, the thing I miss is that there used to be a lot of sort of ordinary practical stores in the town. You know, there was a big, it's like either a Kresge's or a Woolworth's, like a big store where you could buy like underwear, and you know, they had a soda fountain, they had a huge bank of like parakeets and goldfish in the back, and all kinds of, you know, just like a regular store. And there were hardware store, there's a hardware store on Witherspoon Street, there were, you know, just all sorts of regular stores selling practical stuff. And now
like a shoe repair guy.
Yeah, everything like that, you know. And shoes. I mean, there's still some shoes, but just shoes and clothes and hardware and, you know, any old thing. There was a car dealership. So where TD Bank is now, that's kind of at the east end of Nassau Street, like very near like Blue Point Grill and the second small world. Yeah, there was where the post office is now. There was right next to that, there was a big old building, this Turney Motors. I remember my father got this enormous, hideous brown, indestructible brown station wagon there. But there was just all these businesses that are now just in big boxes out on Route 1. Okay, I mean, you could really, if you lived walking distance from the center of Princeton, you know, there was a supermarket. So there was, what was it called, Davidson Supermarket, that was right next to it's where CVS is now. Like, it was basically, I think, like CVS and one adjoining store. There was a, you know, complete regular supermarket in the town. There were also two in the shopping center, Acme and A&P.
Do you recall, there must have been some famous people at the university when your dad was there. Did you hear anybody talk of interest, or, you know, did you recall?
I don't recall that. I mean, it was...
I mean, you had some Nobel Prize winners.
Yeah, I mean, I remember John Nash was this crazy guy who just rode back and forth on the dinky all day, but we didn't know who he was then. I mean, I remember learning about his work in graduate school and then realizing that was the guy, but, yeah, so...
And Abe Spinell was a fan.
Oh, now, he was an interesting character. So I think he gave a lot of money to that chamber music series.
That's how he got friendly with Barbara.
Yeah. So he was this tiny little guy. He was kind of an inventor. So supposedly he invented spandex. And that's, his name's Spinell, that's why it's called spandex. And apparently his company was also involved in building the spacesuits for the moon or whatever. Anyway, he's quite wealthy. But apparently so he would go into Davidson's in town, and he couldn't be bothered to wait in the line to check out, so he would just walk out with stuff. And they caught him, but anyway, found out he was a millionaire, and he just made an arrangement that he would just give them a fixed amount of money for the year and just be able to walk in there and shoplift anything he wanted.
And didn't they used to live in Drumthwacket?
They did. So the governor's house was Morven, and he lived in Drumthwacket. And I think he actually lived in what was actually the carriage house of Drumthwacket, which had been converted to quite a nice house. So he lived there, and I remember one of my friends sort of had a job for the summer being his Guy Friday or something, just running errands for him. I remember he had a Studebaker Avanti, which was a very fancy car. But yeah, that anyway, he passed away, and then somehow Drumthwacket, they moved, so the governor is now in Drumthwacket and Morven's now museum. But yeah, he was very crusty character. And I guess about, I don't know, he's under 5 feet tall. He was a very interesting guy. But
yeah, when they made that movie Rude People and they had Danny DeVito for the supposed inventor of spandex.
Ruthless People, right? Yeah, oh, yeah, I think maybe he was patterned people. After that guy. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like it was. It influenced it, but it never really, lunch. But yeah. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, his wife lived a lot longer than he did. That she was still around for quite a while. But yeah, I think he must have passed away in the late 80s sometime. But yeah, he was a real town character. All right. Anything else you want to cover? Or?
Well, I think that kind of sums it up.
Anyway, so. Yeah, I am kind of a fond of, like, random, not maybe very useful stories that are mildly entertaining. But anyway, so, yeah, but it is, it's more cosmopolitan now. There are more people that work in New York or whatever, and there's a lot more businesses around here besides the university.
Just the amount of development. I mean, it's really, Princeton had a real history, was the oldest town, probably in the whole state, and then around it, it's just so rural.
Yeah, I mean,
and you still feel like the culture is different from when you go to your mother's house in Rocky Hill to here. It's still
Rocky Hill's
kind of different.
Rocky Hill. So my parents got divorced in the late 70s, and my mother bought this house in Rocky Hill, which at that time was considered like a really downscale working class community, and that didn't last long. I mean, it was. Changed almost within a year or two of her buying that house. But, I don't know. I mean, I think it's more interesting place to live now. I mean, I think visually, Princeton managed the development very well. If you compare it to all the stuff that's out on Route 1 or elsewhere, they really kept the town doesn't look that different now, and I think that's a really good thing. But I do miss that, you know, it being kind of a complete town, you know, having people of more, you know, different, you know, economic strata and having, you know, being able to get ordinary everyday items in the town and not having to, you know, drive out to the highway. So you know, the kind of, there's good changes and bad changes. Okay.
Thank you again for your time. This is the end of the recording.